Our first case is 55488, Torin Petroleum versus Lubersky. Lubersky, Inc., Ms. Pagny for the appellants, Mr. Hyman for the respondents. Ms. Pagny.
Good morning. May it please the court. Tiffany Pagny on behalf of Dr. Yurkin Bekhtiev and the Bekhtiev Board. I'd like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal, please. The purpose of the instant lawsuit is to put a stop once and for all to Bekhtiev's illegal usurpation of Tehran's corporate power. This is the sole purpose of the lawsuit as stated by the Lubersky Group in their application for TRO filed in Carson City to put a stop to Bekhtiev. This is also the same request that was made and denied by the Vanatek Group just 4 months earlier by a California federal court, where Vanatek went in and asked the court to find these very same things, that the February 19th board meeting wasn't valid, that Bekhtiev did not hold a majority of the shares. The California federal court said there were material issues of fact, that Bekhtiev had provided enough information to send that issue to trial, to a jury. So what happened then? Well, what happened then is Vanatek and Lubersky got together and they came into Carson City 2 days before the next shareholders meeting was supposed to take place at the Bekhtiev board. They came in on August 27th and had a TRO issued without participation of the Bekhtiev board. Now, they said they sued Tehran Petroleum and they served the right people with that order before it was issued, but the fact of the matter is it wasn't issued towards Bekhtiev, even though Bekhtiev was the target of that TRO. So the orders issued and that board meeting didn't take place, and the Bekhtiev board hired counsel who came into Carson City and said, hey, wait a minute, we're the proper board here. One of the main issues that we're here to talk about is the party issue, and I know that that's one of the interesting issues, because if they weren't a proper party there, then you might not have jurisdiction here, and the Carson City have jurisdiction to do what they did, and that's one of the things that this court asked us to brief and to talk about. And I think it's important on the party issue to keep in mind that the Bekhtiev board, again, being the only party that was targeted, participated in the ongoing litigation up to the February 2010 order of the district court. They provided discovery, they attended hearings, they provided most of the pleadings in this case. They're the only party that answered the complaint. The Vanatek board did not. All the Vanatek board did was come in and make and file non-oppositions to everything that Lubersky was asking for. And in fact, Lubersky was the primary one who argued on behalf of the Vanatek board in this litigation in Carson City. Now,
what issues were raised challenging the propriety of this suit structure in the district court? And by that I mean, was there a Rule 19 issue? Did somebody argue that this filing violated the first-to-file rule? Did anyone raise that under NRS Chapter 30 they didn't have the right parties present to grant effective deck relief? When and where were those issues raised in the district court?
All those issues were raised, Your Honor, by the Bekhtiev board in the district court. They were raised in the form of Jones Vargas came in to represent Bekhtiev and said, you cannot issue an injunction against a party who is not here, that you just can't do it. You don't have the right parties before this court. Even Mr. Hyman indicated when they were discussing, and this is in the September 29, 2009 status conference, found at the fifth volume, the Joint Appendix 885, Mr. Hyman says, you're asking us to look at share issues, consideration issues. Respectfully, Your Honor, the court can't do that. There's a huge due process problem here. The court cannot adjudicate the property rights of a third party who is not before it. That was Lubersky who made that argument. That was the same argument that was being made by the Bekhtiev board.
What's the cite to that again? I'm sorry.
That is the fifth volume of the Joint Appendix at 885.
Thank you.
And Mr. Hyman goes on to say, moreover, those parties are necessary parties under Rule 19. He's talking about all the shareholders. And when we're looking at that issue, it's interesting because Dr. Bekhtiev himself was not individually a part of the suit, but he's the one that claimed to be the majority shareholder at that meeting February 19th, where a new board of directors was called. So to the extent the district court wanted to and did in fact find that that board was unlawfully elected, what they in essence did was decide that Bechtia wasn't the proper owner of those shares. And that was improper without the, there wasn't substantial evidence, number one, to support that. But number two, he wasn't, Dr. Bechtia wasn't individually a party as a shareholder to that suit. The other side argued, well, he should intervene. He doesn't have to intervene. The Nevada law is clear. Just knowledge of some sort of a litigation proceeding doesn't require a party or put a party on notice that they need to intervene in that. They have to be joined. And Rule 19 provides a way, case law also provides a way for the court to bring those parties in sua sponte if they have jurisdiction. If they don't have jurisdiction, then they can't decide those issues. They just can't. And that's what was done in this case against Dr. Bechtiev.
Well, did he need to resist the temptation to appear at all rather than do what he did, which is hire Jones Vargas to come in and make the arguments that he would make?
Your Honor, that's another interesting issue because there was supposed to be an evidentiary hearing. There was supposed to be a hearing where everyone was supposed to come and provide live testimony and have the ability to cross-examine and examine witnesses on these very control issues. For whatever reason, and I've looked at this. I wasn't a party to the underlying proceedings, but I've looked at this pretty carefully. I don't see where there was ever a decision made before that February 2010 ruling that said we're going to forego an evidentiary hearing. These folks were coming, a lot of these folks were coming from Kazakhstan. That's not an easy trip to make repeatedly for purposes of status conferences or depositions and that sort of thing, which there hasn't been any evidence even submitted to show that Lubersky tried to take Dr. Bechtiev's deposition. Could have happened. It's not in the record. I don't know if it did or not.
Well, Ms. Pagny, perhaps I could re-ask Justice Pickering's question because your response, I'm not sure, dealt with it. And the question was whether or not the Bechtiev group, in effect, waived service or waived a claim that they should be the subject of a summons by their participation in the process. I have in front of me a couple hundred pages of pleadings and attachments and affidavits associated with the opposition filed to the plaintiff's request for preliminary injunction. Could you address the question of whether or not Bechtiev board has either tried this motion by consent or waived service or?
Thank you, Your Honor. I think I misunderstood. I was making a distinction between Dr. Bechtiev individually as a shareholder. I think the board absolutely was a party, and I think they came in and asserted themselves as the proper party in this suit.
So even though they didn't formally request intervention, they intervened by consent, they participated, court acknowledged them.
Correct. For all practical purposes, the board did in fact intervene. They were parties to this suit. There were two competing boards. Those were the proper parties for purposes of the remedy that was requested by Mr.
There was never any stipulation that they waive service or that they appear by consent. It's just their actions.
Correct, Your Honor.
Mm-hmm.
But they...
But now it seems on appeal, they argue that we weren't, in effect, a proper party because we weren't served.
No, Your Honor, if that's what it sounds like, I apologize. The Bechtiev board was a party. And to the extent the district court, what happened, and the reason it gets a little bit confusing is because they are treated as a party up until the February 2010 order.
Sure.
Then they're cut off and they're not allowed to participate. So the argument is twofold. They're either a party and you can assert that, so you can enter relief against them in February 2010, or they're not a party and you can't.
So I'm trying to clarify, that was the clarification I was seeking in your argument. You maintain on behalf of the Bechtiev board that they are a party by consent.
Correct.
To this litigation, even though not served. But if the court proceeds after February with its order in their absence, then they were a necessary party and should have been joined for all further proceedings under Rule 19.
Well, correct. And if they weren't a party, as the district court states in February 2010, then the court could not go on and enter judgment in the form of a final judgment pursuant to a motion for summary judgment filed by Lubersky after the court determined they weren't a party.
Well, there's another interesting question that hasn't been raised. The Declaratory Relief Act requires that all parties to be affected by the judgment be joined. So is this judgment effective against the BECDF board under the Declaratory Relief Act?
Would it be effective against the board in terms of the February 16th, 2010 mm-hmm. order? Mm-hmm. I think that the board has consented to jurisdiction, and the board was a party to the action for purposes of that February 16th order. Now, there's other problems that go back. I mean, we've talked about the lack of authentications. There's actual evidence that was submitted by the BECDF board to show the district court, look, we've got evidence of forgeries, we've got evidence of fraud. There's a question as to whether or not the corporation could have, I mean, there's all sorts of share allocation problems that were implicitly decided by the court's February 16th, 2010 order that he couldn't decide without all of those parties being present and being heard from. That's, I mean, that's another issue that's, I think that the court, district court didn't understand. He jumped or rushed to judgment. And the reason they rushed to judgment is because we had an April 2010 trial date set in California. Mm-hmm. They got this court to rush this through, and the transcript from the secret telephone conference that took place in April, Mr. Hyman, on behalf of Lubersky, says, we need to get this done quickly, Your Honor. We want you to do this quickly because there's trial coming up.
If I may, I'm confused by the position taken by the Jones Vargas firm and now your position here as to BECDF's status as a party. They, as I understood your response to Justice Pickering's first question, the BECDF board said you can't proceed without all the parties being here. Or was that response limited only to Dr. BECDF himself?
That was limited to Dr. BECDF himself. Insofar as that
Jones
order
Vargas,
affected
did they, his... Did Jones Vargas appear on behalf of the BECDF board as well?
They appeared on behalf of Turan through the as being controlled by the BECDF board.
But not in the April 2010 call that led to the judgment that is part of what's being appealed here, correct?
No, we didn't.
So that was a totally ex parte call, not just as to Mr. or Dr. BECDF, whose non-party status remained an issue, but also as to the BECDF board, who you contend was a party by consent, yet was excluded from the ultimate deck relief in the case.
That's correct, Your Honor. We weren't given notice of that motion. We weren't on that ex-party phone call. It was Lubersky and Turand through Vanatech.
Right. If I could just clarify my confusion.
Sorry,
on the one hand, the argument is Jones Vargas claims Dr. Bekdiev's not a party and has to be served, but apparently consented or waived or did something to give the court jurisdiction over the BECDF board as a party. Is there any pleading, any statement on the record? Did counsel have authority to waive service of process? Is there anything in the record that one would point to in which the BECDF board consents to proceeding as a party without service of summons?
I think, Your Honor, only insofar as they were arguing that they were the controlling board mm-hmm. there, and I think it was implicit in their participation in the action, defending the corporation as that board.
As you argue the case today, do you have authority on behalf of the BECDF board, not necessarily Dr. BECDF, but the board itself, the group that is represented in that category, to state that it waives any objection to summons, complaint, service of process for purposes of this proceeding?
For purposes of the Carson City proceeding, I don't have that specific authority, Your Honor. I haven't raised that specific question mm-hmm. with them, to be honest with you.
But you maintain on their behalf that they're a party.
I maintain on their behalf that they're a party, or if they weren't, then they should have been, because they were necessary and indispensable, and so the court should have made them a party if they weren't. We believe we were. We participated as if we were.
Right.
as a board.
May I ask a question? And we're eating up her time considerably.
I'll give Mr. Hyman the extra time also.
I'm a bit perplexed by the idea that the board is a party, and Dr. Bekhtiev was a member of the Bekhtiev board, correct?
That's correct.
So how is it that the board can be a party, yet Dr. Bekhtiev is not personally a party? Is there authority for dividing Dr. Bekhtiev's capacity in that fashion?
I think,
and if
there,
so, where, what is it?
I think there is, Your Honor, and because what we're making a distinction between a board who can control a corporation, you have a board of directors that can control the corporation, and then you have individual shareholders. And so I think to the extent the individual share, if you're trying to take an individual shareholder's rights, they have to be individually named, whether or not they're a director or an officer of a corporation.
I would agree with that, but is there authority for the proposition that a board is somehow an appropriate party without the individual board members being included?
I think it depends on the relief that's requested, Your Honor. And in this case, the relief that was requested, it was a battle over who controlled the corporation. And what it turned into was this majority share issue, and Dr. Bekhtiev was never made a party to that when his individual shares were called into question. Does that make sense?
Well, if I could follow up on that, the pleading that I'm looking at, filed by Jones Vargas, recites the fact that it is being filed on behalf of the defendant, Turin Petroleum.
Correct, Your Honor.
It does not state that it is being filed on behalf of an entity called the Bekhtiev Board or those who make up such an alleged entity.
I understand, Your Honor, and they were filing it on behalf of the Bekhtiev Board, because, and it does get confusing. It's very convoluted, and it's convoluted throughout the entire proceeding.
I just fail to see how the court can determine whether these people are parties or not. I understand their claims and their interests, because they're claiming to be the board, but I mean to act on behalf of the company.
That's correct.
So they're not making appearances in this case on behalf of themselves or some entity called the Bekhtiev Board. Their appearance in the pleading is on behalf of the defendant company.
For purposes of this appeal, though, Your Honor, they can be here because they are aggrieved parties, and it's just like the Blaine equipment case that's cited in the, the briefing. To the extent this court says that they weren't
the
party.
So before the district court proceeded in this case, the persons claiming to be members of the Venetec board and members of the Bekhtiev board should have been joined as parties.
I think the court should have made the individual boards, absolutely, should have said, okay, it's not just Turan Petroleum, we're bringing both boards in, you're the real parties. You're the proper parties.
Thank you.
I'm going to give you an extra 3 minutes for your rebuttal, and then, Mr. Hyman, I'm going to give you 18 from the get-go. Now, that doesn't mean you have to use the 18, but you certainly are entitled to that.
Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Scott Hyman, and I represent the respondents, who are shareholders of Turan Petroleum, Inc. A shareholder meeting is the quintessential corporate act. It is not an act of the individual shareholders who take it. It is governed by the articles of incorporation and the bylaws of the corporation. It is run by the corporate officers and directors. It is called by the corporate officers and directors. And if a shareholder meeting is not called, under 78.345, the shareholders sue the corporation to hold a shareholder meeting. And if you look at that statute, it says, if the corporation fails to hold a shareholder meeting, then the shareholders bring an action against the corporation to compel it.
Mr. Hyman, the relief you're seeking in this overall proceeding is far more than just calling a shareholders meeting. The relief you're seeking is much broader than that, including, ultimately, in these scheduling orders, a determination as to which board is the managing board.
Well,
right?
Actually, that's True to some extent, Your Honor.
Well, that's what the judgment
what
was.
What we had done is we had sued Turan to challenge the validity of a shareholder meeting because it was called without the it was called improperly and it lacked a quorum. That is an appropriate challenge for a shareholder to bring against a corporation. Now, as a result of that, if that meeting was invalid, lots of things happened that are ancillary to that initial determination. But if you look at our complaint, it is very clear that all of the relief that we sought, we only sued Turan, we sought a declaration that that meeting, now we didn't know about the consents at the time, so we only sued to stop the meetings. But we sued Turan to say that this meeting is invalid. And if this meeting is invalid, then anything that flowed from that meeting was invalid. And that was the ancillary relief that we sought. But again, it's...
From your complaint, at least according to the orders entered in this case, the case itself expanded into a determination by the court as to who was the managing board.
And if I could address that, Your Honor. A corporation is a fictitious entity, and it can only appear and only act through its agents. And in this instance, you had two separate groups come in and say, I am the lawful agent of this company. That is the only role that either board played. They came in and said, I am the agent for Turan. And so before the court could actually entertain the substance of the matter, it had to determine who is the agent, who has the right to be there.
But that wasn't an issue that was, according to your comments a moment ago, an issue for which you sought relief in your complaint. You didn't file a complaint that said, I want to know which board is running this company. You filed a complaint that said, I want to stop these shareholders' meetings.
Absolutely, and that was what our...
That complaint, and I'm not sure how you get from A to B, but from that complaint, the scheduling order of October 13th specifically recites at line 22, record on appeal SA0553, and therefore proceed with briefing the issue of control of defendant. Is that issue articulated in your complaint?
No, that issue arose only because after...
Is that issue articulated in your complaint?
Absolutely not. That issue arose, Your Honor.
That's only... what the first order the judge enters resolves.
If I could explain that, Your Honor.
Okay.
The only reason that issue arose is at the first hearing on injunction, two law firms showed up, two competing law firms, and said, I represent this plaintiff. Now, the relief that I was seeking was the same. I was seeking a determination as to whether or not this shareholder meeting that was held by the corporation was legitimate. However, as a preliminary matter, because two separate groups showed up claiming to be the agent of the sole defendant, the court had to first address that issue as to, okay, wait a second, before I can get to the merits, I need to decide who actually represents this defendant. And that's why that issue is addressed in the first order.
Would you acknowledge that he is deciding an issue that affects parties who are not before him?
I would not, Your Honor. Because
And how do they get there?
Because for two reasons. And it goes to what the interests are of the respective parties. And that's really the critical part of the analysis under Rule 19. Now, the Bektaev board... or any board, the Vanatech board, they serve at the pleasure of the shareholders. Okay, they can be removed.
But implicit in the declaration of relief, that declaratory judgment that you sought and obtained is a determination as to what shareholders own what percentage of the stock and therefore are entitled to seat this board. And I'm hard-pressed to understand how you can say that there are no absent people's interests affected when that determination directly affects the Bektaev shareholders.
In 2009, when Mr. Bektaev held this meeting, there were 196 shareholders of record and 133 million shares outstanding.
Okay. But he disputes that.
But now, under our Section 78.350, every shareholder of record at the time of the meeting is entitled to one vote. He may dispute who the shareholders of record were, but that dispute had not been adjudicated. Up to that point, the shareholder list of Turan controlled. He didn't have the unilateral authority to say who was a shareholder of record and who was not a shareholder of record. And that's really important because Trek Resources, who makes up the majority of the shares he claimed voted at those actions, they hadn't been a shareholder of record, and he knew they hadn't been a shareholder of record since 2007. And so the actions were patently invalid from the beginning. Now, he could absolutely go out and get a judicial determination that Trek should be a shareholder and order and direct the court, have the company be directed to reinstate those shares. But until those shares are reinstated and that order is obtained, they weren't a shareholder of record and couldn't vote. And that's basically what the court's decision, I believe, turned on, because he relied almost exclusively on the transaction journal.
Well, under NRS 30.130, how is the judgment the court ultimately entered in this case effective against BECTF or those who claim to be members of the board?
It's not. All it is effective is Turan. What it says is Turan, and in fact, under Rule 65, one of the things that the appellants have been saying is this injunction binds us. This injunction doesn't bind us. Under Rule 65, it specifically says that it doesn't bind anybody other than the party. That's very clear from the rule itself. All our injunction does is it tells Turan as a separate entity, you cannot operate under the direction of you cannot take any action that flows from these shareholder meetings that were patently invalid. That's all we were seeking in this case.
Well, it may have been all that you were seeking when you started, but that's not what the court gave you in its orders. It decided which board runs the company without the board's competing boards apparently being present officially.
The reason it decided, the way it decided that issue, though, is interesting, because what everybody agreed was that from the very beginning, and this comes out of the Articles of Incorporation, that from the very beginning that Anatoly Vanatek was a director. And he had never been removed. So he would continue to be a director unless he was actually effectively removed by the Vanatek board. What the court said, the court never made a decision that the board that's presently in place was the present directors. All they said was that the Bektayev board had not been lawfully elected in accordance with Nevada law because there was no evidence that they had been elected by a majority of shareholders.
Do you view that order as declaratory?
Only to the extent it determined who was the agent of Turan Petroleum for the purpose of that litigation.
Do you view that order as binding on the participants or those claiming to be members of the BECTF board?
No, I do not. It's the order that I believe was binding on them is the judgment, which I believe has preclusive effect under certain circumstances.
Oh,
but
so
the injunction I don't believe is binding on them.
So you feel the judgment itself is binding on the BECTF board?
I believe that and frankly, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals has just held that judgment is entitled to preclusive effect as to the declaratory relief. Now,
my question was, you just said a moment ago you believe that the judgment in this case under the declaratory relief statute is not binding on Ms. Pannier's clients, and now you have said you view the judgment to be binding on Ms. Pannier's clients.
I'm trying to understand
which it is.
The judgment itself is not entered against the Bektayev board, and the injunction certainly does not apply to any of them individually. It only applies to Turan.
But you seek to have it give preclusive effect.
No. To the extent that the issue in the interpleader action as to who was entitled to that money, it had preclusive effect. That's what I'm trying to say.
Really?
Yes.
You're not addressing Justice Hardesty's question. You keep going back to the injunction. But the declaratory judgment action, if you got a declaration that the Bektayev board had no authority because it was improperly elected, and you invalidated the shareholder meeting that produced that board, correct?
I believe that what we obtained was a declaratory judgment that the September I'm sorry, the February 2009 shareholder meeting and the related consents, which are actions of Turan, are invalid.
Okay.
That determination.
Pause there for a moment. I'm perplexed and troubled by the fact that in April you had a session with the district court judge that did not include lawyers representing the Bektayev board, as to whom you say the declaratory judgment you procured as a result of that session with the judge binds them and carries preclusive effect as to their assertion of rights deriving from the shareholders' meeting. I don't know how you can do that. You can't have it both ways.
Because it goes to the agent, it goes again to the nature of their participation in the case, which was they came in and said, I'm the agent of Turan. Turan was the only named party. Judge Wilson said, no, you're not. And from the very beginning, he said, I'm going to determine who the agent is. And if you're not the agent, then you don't have a right to do anything in this lawsuit. So once he decided that they were not the agent, that from the very beginning, they came in and their sole role was to represent Turan. That was their appearance. That was the nature of their participation in the case. I represent Turan Petroleum. And someone had to represent Turan Petroleum because it's a corporation. It's a fiction. Once he made the determination, and this was clear from his prior, from the prior proceedings, once he made the determination that they didn't, then unless they intervened and came in and said, okay, now we're in our individual capacity, they were no longer part
of
the case.
You just told us that you don't regard the court's order resolving who the agent is, as you characterize it, no, as binding on the Bektayev board.
For the purpose of these proceedings, perhaps I'm a little confused, Your Honor, at what you were getting at. For the purpose of the proceedings below, that order, the February 16th order, was binding. It was a determination. This is who represents Turan in this lawsuit.
So would the Bektayev board, under your view of the case, have had the opportunity to appeal the judge's determination that it was not the proper agent?
No, I don't believe that was an appealable order. I don't believe it was an appealable order at all.
Did the subject matter of the determination become appealable when the judgment was entered?
I don't believe that they have the right to file this appeal. I think they had other remedies. And let me make an analogy.
So they had their rights determined by a district court judge in Carson City as to whether they were the proper board or not, but it could not appeal it or contest it, but are bound by it. That's an interesting concept, Mr. Hyman.
If I could analogize, Your Honor, to a situation where a party files a motion to intervene. In that case, the party files the motion to intervene. Judge makes a determination as to whether or not they have a right to participate in the case. They're participating in the case for the purpose of having that motion determined. But once the motion is determined and adversely ruled against them, they're out of the case, and they can't appeal that order. This court has found that motions to intervene are non-appealable because the underlying participant is not a party.
There was no motion to intervene in this case.
And I would suggest that what's happened here was absolutely analogous, which is, the Bektayev board came in and said, we have a right to be, we are the agent of this defendant. The Vanatek board came in and said, we are the agent of this defendant.
Neither one of which issues was raised by your complaint, according to you.
But it didn't need to be because we just sued a party. We didn't have any control as to who came into the litigation and said, we represent the company. That was completely out of our control. This was the only reason this issue was determined in the manner it was determined, was because the Bektayev board decided to come in and say, hey, we represent this company. That's why the issue was raised. It never would have been raised by us. Now, they could have intervened. They certainly had notice of the proceedings. We weren't trying to hide it from them. If they wanted to come in and say, no, we have a right to contest this, but they didn't. Now, I would like to go back and refocus a little bit on the underlying decision that was made, the February 16th decision. The Bektayev board has challenged that. They had the absolute right, and they vigorously contested that decision as to who was the appropriate agent of Turan. Right. They have come back and said the judge disregarded evidence and therefore wasn't supported by substantial evidence. That is absolutely not the case. What happened was the evidence that they submitted was either absolutely frivolous or frankly was irrelevant to the ultimate issue. For instance, they argue that they were denied the opportunity to conduct discovery as to whether or not the transfer of Trek shares was appropriate or was fraudulent. The transfer of the Trek shares occurred. Nobody disputes that. So nobody disputes the fact that in February of 2009, Trek was not a shareholder of record. And there is absolutely no case, no statute that they've cited to, and frankly, 78350, under 78350, they can't, that would allow Trek to have voted 24 million shares in February of 2009. That was clear from the court didn't need to look at anything other than the transaction journal to see that they had not been a shareholder of record for 2 years prior. And so there is absolutely no question but that, A, it wasn't necessary to conduct additional discovery or have an evidentiary hearing, because if they proved what they said was true, it killed their claim. There's no way. Once you start with the assertion that Trek was not a shareholder, then absolutely, under the present situation, Trek could not have voted and the Bektaev board could not have been duly elected.
In making the findings of fact and conclusions of law in this case, did the judge rely on or consider, I should say, the affidavit of Dr. Bektaev that was filed in support of the opposition?
Not that I'm aware of. I mean, I know that it would have been considered in the underlying proceedings, but it wasn't, again, it wasn't relevant. Once we showed that what he did rely on was the transaction journal, and the transaction journal established that they hadn't been a shareholder since 2007, and in fact, that was Bektaev's whole complaint, that they hadn't been a shareholder since 2007. And so there's just no way. If you only have 27 million shares and 24 million of them aren't held of record by the party who claims to have voted them, you can't have a shareholder meeting and you can't take shareholder action. And that's what I believe the court relied on when it made its decision. If I could have 1 minute just to address the jurisdictional question.
I'll give you the minute. Go ahead.
In the very first hearing, and I will try and find a site while counsel is going through her rebuttal, but in the very first hearing, Mr. Klum said that his clients, he didn't have authority to submit to the jurisdiction of the court, and his clients weren't going to submit to the jurisdiction of the court. And that is evidenced by the fact that if there's 196 shareholders of record, most of which are in the United States, why would you hold a shareholder meeting in Kazakhstan? Why would you then hold the second shareholder meeting in Canada? It was always their intention to go out and avoid the jurisdiction of the Nevada courts. Now, we were not a party to the California proceeding. We couldn't become a party to the California proceeding. But as a shareholder, we had a right to challenge the actions. The only entity we could easily and legitimately sue was Turan. That is who we sued. And that is who our judgment binds. And that is who our injunction binds.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Rebuttal, 3 minutes.
Just briefly, Your Honor, thank you. Again, the TRO application in this case says the instant lawsuits to put a stop once and for all to Bektaev's actions. It doesn't say we want to stop Turan. Mr. Hyman just got up here and said he wanted to have the issue of corporate control determined. That was ongoing in the California court. He knew that was ongoing in the California court. In April 2009, 4 months before this Carson City case was filed, that court said tribal issues remain as to whether the plaintiffs held a majority of shares and who controls this company, and we're going to decide that issue. And that order is found in Volume 3 of the Joint Appendix, beginning at 482.
One of the California cases was dismissed on the grounds the complaint was, they were given three times to amend and couldn't produce an intelligible complaint. Is that this case that you're referring to?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. That was a case where we have, Mr. Vanatek has been, and you'll see throughout
don't
the
waste your time with it. I just want
Yeah, he's been sued a number of times, and Bektaev, as I understand it, went after him and I'm not exactly sure.
So that's a different proceeding that also California, but different.
This April, or this Santa Ana, California proceeding was scheduled for trial in April 2010 when the secret phone call was had. And what happened after that? This judgment out of the Carson City Court that said Bechtiev does not have control was delivered to the California court, and the California court said, wait, I mean, they beat us to it, basically. So we have to listen to what they have to say. So we, of course, went in and said, we're appealing that issue, and we're appealing it for all of these reasons. So that's what the purpose of this action was in Carson City. It wasn't to see who really owns control to protect the Lubersky shareholders. It was to stop Bechtiev. But Bechtiev wasn't made a party. And on that issue, Bechtiev is not the corporate raider in this case. He owned that $2 billion concession. He gave it to Tehran, transferred it to Tehran, because he was going to get a majority interest in that company. And this issue about Trek, Bechtiev was the sole shareholder, as I understand it, in Trek. So to the extent those shares were somehow transferred out of that corporation, that's an issue that would need to be ferreted out in an evidentiary hearing with proper discovery, because it's an improper transfer, as far as we're concerned, a fraudulent transfer.
Could you address for us precisely the relief you want? You want the declaratory judgment vacated and reversed. What about the February order granting the injunctive relief and declaring that the Bechtiev board cannot, it was in effect an invalid board because the meeting that produced it was wrong?
We think it has to be reversed and there has to be an evidentiary hearing. And whether, you know, there's, I don't know, there could be authority, I haven't seen any. I don't think a preliminary injunction can be issued without an evidentiary hearing against somebody. Generally, that's what you do. You get the emergency order, and then you go and you have an evidentiary hearing, everyone puts on all of the evidence, and then an injunction is entered. That they were deprived of that right here, and I don't know why, for no reason. The court doesn't explain why it decided not to have that hearing. But to honor your question, or to answer your question, Justice Hardesty, the affidavit of Bechtiev was not considered, and I can say it wasn't considered because the court specifically said it wasn't going to consider any affidavits. It wasn't going to consider any evidence unless the parties had an opportunity to examine and cross-examine live witnesses, which also were supposed to be required to authenticate documents. Yet he relied on documents that were not authenticated by live testimony. And with that, unless you have further questions.
Further questions, just...
Oh, I'm sorry.
I have one further question. On the relief granted, though, if you carry your argument to the logical extreme that there are missing necessary parties in this case, could even the injunction be held appropriately?
Not with the expansive relief that was ultimately granted in that injunction. No.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Panel thanks both counsel for their interesting arguments in this matter, spirited, I must say. And this matter will stand submitted.